Thank you for joining us for this webinar, which is compiled and produced by the team at biznews.com. A recording of this webinar will be available later today on the biznews.com channel on YouTube. From our team, until the next time, cheerio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's BizNews Finance Friday webinar. I'm Jackie Cameron from BizNews, and with us today, we've got some very special guests. Skalk Malan, CEO of BrightRock. He's the chief actuary behind all the innovation at BrightRock. So thank you very much for joining us, Skalk.
Thank you, Jackie. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. And Dawn Ridler is one of our regular guests on the show. And Dawn is known for her no-nonsense approach to financial issues. She's an independent financial advisor based in Johannesburg, also very qualified with an MBA and also a science background. So welcome, Dawn. Thanks for joining us again.
Nice to see you again, Jackie.
And we're also hoping that Rob MacDonald will join us soon. He might be with us already, but if not, we'll see him shortly. So
I'm here, Jackie. I don't know if you can hear me.
Yes, hi, Rob. We can hear you.
If you could turn your camera on. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm just trying to work out how to turn my camera on, but hopefully you'll see me soon.
No problem. And, of course, welcome to everybody who's joined us on the webinar today. So if you could feel free to start putting your questions in the box on the right. And my colleague, Ariella, might just check to make sure the tech is working. Ariella, do you want to see whether the tech is working for everybody and if the sound is working?
Yes. Hi, everyone. Just to check, obviously, get your questions in early. The earlier, the better. And just to check that everyone's mics are ready and working, if you see in the dashboard section, there is a high five. Please could you, if your sound and everything is working, please could you click on that high five just so I can see that everyone is good to go. There we go. Getting some high fives. Cool, and we are all good to go. Rob, I have sent you a webcam request.
Okay, great. Thank you. Yeah, I'm trying to share it, and I'm not sure why it's not happening, but I'll see if I can resolve it.
So perhaps we can start, Skalk, with you. You've produced some very interesting results, which show that your company has been doing quite well in the COVID-19 era. Perhaps you could just sketch how this has happened and how you've managed to buck the trend, and also tell us a bit about your products and how they differ from the other life insurance products in South Africa.
Yes, Jackie, let me maybe start highlighting our year. It's been, as we all know, it's been a devastating year for economies. It's been a devastating year for so many families out there, in particular in South Africa. But in that, BrightRock has seen, you know, a few kernels of opportunities and nuggets of opportunities that that I think has really led to us having seen remarkable results during this period. And I think it really starts with, you know, BrightRock is very much a digital platform, digital-based organization from day one. You know, our product, if I talk about how our product operates, and we talk about our needs match insurance offering, it is a product that can be delivered virtually. It's a discussion between an advisor and a client to co-create that solution for the client. It's not that hard, often referred to as life insurance having to be sold rather than bought. And you know, we've seen reacting very quickly when COVID struck. You know, the hard lockdown around end of March. You know, we very quickly got all our people back home working virtually, but we also very quickly brought out solutions for our advisors to be able to still operate. You know, the traditional challenge of life insurance having to draw bloods, you know, that we've made available to advisors to and clients not needing that, and also keeping in mind a lot of our systems and process was already operating on that basis, so it kind of was an easy transition in a way. And I do think that was a big catalyst for our experience, positive experience. And then I think, you know, the product, as I explained earlier, operating in that virtual space, making it easier for an advisor to sell via let's say Zoom, was a big driver. And, you know, as you referred to, the results has been remarkable. I mean, in just to quote one stat for you, if you look at the NMG survey that's been done quarterly, independent survey in life insurance sales, BrightRock performed the second best in the advisor market, the independent advisor market in South Africa. You know, and we saw positive growth of more than 4% year on year, where the rest of the industry was sitting down 38%. So that's testament, I think, of a as you say, a great performance. But it was challenging. You know, it required a lot of hours from the team, a lot of hard work, and being out there as well. I think that's another element. We kept on engaging with our clients, with our advisors during this time, and that's really what was important to us, you know, to keep on that service, not just in terms of a claim support, but also new business for our advisors. And I think the BrightRock product, you know, we often talk about condensing time. I think, you know, if you talk about being able to sit with a client and discuss his needs in detail, and the product matches those needs exactly, you know, I think in a way being able to sell virtually and being forced to sell virtually opened that door for us and created a focus on our product and what needs match insurance is all about.
To some extent, life insurance is a bit of a grudge purchase, isn't it? Because we don't get to enjoy it ourselves. So, and we also hear about people never paying out. And I see from your statistics that you do actually pay out quite a lot. And that's something that you're proud of.
Yeah, so if you look life to date, BrightRock has paid in excess of 500 million rands in claims. But what's even more important than that statistic and is, you know, paying on certain events that our product supports, that's been designed inside our product, that we felt no other provider offers that level of cover, that level of certainty for our clients, and that's something we're very proud of. You know, if I can give you a couple of examples, you know, we've done away completely with things like general survival periods, where people have to wait a couple of days. Even in some cases, a few months on your disability side to get that claim. Whereas in our case, you know, on critical illness events, there's no such thing as a general survival period, and if people meet the criteria, they get paid. Another quick example is, you know, many years back, we saw a gap or a shortfall in firstly our product, but also in the market's product when it comes to trauma-related events. And when you've got that falling off your bike or breaking your shoulder, all the way to, you know, we had the strangest events where kids were swallowing magnets at a party. And all those create significant trauma for the family, but insurance is not designed to protect that. And we brought about what we call our trauma IQ benefit, part and parcel of our additional expense benefit. That has really been a step change for us in terms of providing that additional certainty for our clients. And I think it's really come to the fore. You know, if I look at COVID during this period, you know, especially in the underwritten space, I think, and that's consistent across the industry, there hasn't been a significant spike on the underwritten. And I'm talking about your largest sum assured tops of business. In our funeral assistance business, there's been a significant increase in claims, you know, that we've seen, especially months, you know, just shortly after winter, your August, even into September. And we were proud to be able to stand by those families as well and support them in their time of need. You know, and I've personally been out to a number of funeral parlors in this time, and, you know, it's really, it's exceptional the work that they've done during this time, you know, and they're the real heroes during this period that they've supported those families in the midst of immense pressure on those institutions. So we played our small part in that, and I think that's where life insurance is supposed to stand up. You know, you get trained around the handling and many and thinking theoretically about a pandemic, but I think we as an industry can be proud to say we've been through that, you know, and And I think especially the South African life insurance industry has come through it very, very well, you know, relatively speaking. I think also, you know, it speaks to the capital robustness of our sector. So yeah, I think that's been a good outcome for in that regard from being able to support clients in this time. And then, you know, maybe the last point, Jackie, as well, is there's an increased focus from clients on life insurance. You know, there's many stats and studies that indicate that, you know, especially younger people looking to the importance of life insurance, because people understand their mortality, morbidity much better now. And we've all seen families, loved ones, people we know that's been through trauma in their families. And that for us is also seen as being able to step into that, you know, partnering with advisors like Dawn, being able to deliver solutions that clients can understand. And I think, you know, the world is going to change forever. You know, we are going to see the way advice is being delivered, products being delivered in life insurance will never be the same exactly. I do think the value of that, sometimes that face-to-face is important, but I also think there's, and the importance of advice has never been more important than ever before. It's the way that we deliver. And I think technology will play a big role in the future to support advisors and companies to really make it even more efficient and seamless for clients.
It's very interesting that you've actually gone to the funeral parlors. I've never heard of the CEO of a company like yours spending time at grassroots level before. That's really impressive. Do you do a lot of that kind of work in your other areas?
Jackie, I think, you know, especially being a product developer at heart, and when I get those opportunities as much as maybe at the start of BrightCrop's journey, you know, and it's but I think there's a tremendous level of value to be able to engage directly with advisors, with clients, and when that opportunity presents itself, I embrace it, because, you know, BrightCrop was founded on principles of a group of people that believed we can change the industry, and I think we have. I mean, we've made significant impact in the industry from a product point of view. It was also a group of people that were feeling that, you know, being curious, you know, and sometimes curious about listening, you learn a lot more, you know, and a little bit of that humbleness of being able to understand people's problems and coming up with solutions to that. And that was one of the bases that we founded the business. And I see great value in getting that, you know, and you know, I mentioned earlier that example of the Trauma IQ benefit, and that was as a result of seeing one of our clients being in a space where we a product at that point in time wasn't working for them, and we could improve on that. So yes, I think it's critical for any leadership of a business to be at the coalface, as you say, grassroots level, learn and get better, and bring that experience back to the business.
Thank you. Let's turn to Dawn. Now, Dawn has mentioned a few times in our webinars that the COVID situation might change how we get insurance, will make it more difficult for some people. Dawn, would you like to pick up on that?
Yeah, well, you know, I think BrightRock is a brilliant product, but like all life insurers, they put out now what's a COVID questionnaire that everybody has to fill out. And, you know, that's understandable. They have to get a grip on that risk. I mean, none of the clients that, you know, have gone through the process with me have, you know, had a positive COVID test. So I don't know what the sort of underwriting outcome would be. But, you know, when it comes down to the financial planning, and, you know, particularly if you're holistic like I am, and although I focus more on investment, because I mean that's where everybody else is. I don't want to spend my whole life focusing on grudge purchases. But when life insurance, and particularly when it comes to disability and rare disease, plays a very important role, especially with younger clients who've got liabilities, who've got young children, and this kind of thing. And you know, they just quite frankly just haven't built up enough of investments, because they're just too young. They just haven't had enough time to build up those investments so that if anything happens to them, they're not out of pocket in terms of if, you know, it was a disability, or that their family is left financially destitute. But having a product that is so flexible that you can, you know, life insurance doesn't have to be for life. You can make it termed insurance. And this is one of the cornerstones of what BrightRock does, is that it focuses on the fact that life insurance doesn't have to be for life. It can be for a term period. And then you can take that premium and use it elsewhere after you don't need life insurance anymore, because your children are grown up, you've paid off all your bonds, these kind of things. It's that sort of infinite almost flexibility that makes it so easy for a financial advisor like myself to incorporate it into a holistic financial plan for a client.
Skulk, do you have anything to add to that? I see you've got some sort of new approach to stopping and starting the insurance premiums.
Yeah, Jackie. So firstly, I think what just to echo what Dawn is saying in our product, and you know, our product was designed with that flexibility in mind. It's actually, you know, we talk about our three pillars of our product, and you know, it's traditional products, as we like to refer to them, are pretty much the advisor's got to fit his advice into meeting the product. And that's bizarre if you think about it, because if an advisor sits down with the client, understands their needs, and some of them, as Dawn refers to, are short-term needs, others are could be all of life needs, others expire at retirement age, and they morph over time as well, potentially, you know, they ebb and flow, you know, and that's the advice. Now, for an advisor then to squash all of them into one block of cover, and quite often priced for the maximum term, and obviously the price goes with that, just didn't make sense to us, you know. So for us to be able to offer a product that matches the advice, you know, it's a bit of that square peg and round hole problem, and matches the advice all the way, not just on day one to the end, I think has been a big driver of our recent you know, success in COVID, because I think in times like this, it is illuminated more than ever, the value proposition, but also people want to understand what is my life insurance buying, what is it covering. So that I think is critical to keep in mind on our product offering, and I think it's a massive differentiator. In terms of new product announcements, you know, Jackie, during COVID, I mean, we've obviously had you know, premium relief options, but I mean, recently we've launched during our October launch. It really a very exciting product launch, where first and foremost we enhanced our what we call about premium guarantees, and it's quite bizarre, you know, people that buy life insurance today seldom have the certainty that they know exactly what their premium will be next year once they go through an anniversary, and that's just something that's been part of life insurance since forever. And we've always held the view that a client must understand exactly what is this increase going to be. If he chose that increase, what will that increase be next year? And in fact, we've now also looked to enhance that even further by introducing on our death cover benefits that premium is then guaranteed for the full duration. So in other words, if you've chosen whole of life, if you've chosen 10 years or 20 years, as Dawn spoke about, where the rest of the industry is still, and prior to this change, we were also in that space where you've got a 10-year guaranteed term. So all of these are driven, and it's quite technical, but it's all driven to provide increased certainty for clients, and obviously the advisor that supports that client. We can maybe chat about other enhancements, but you know, BrightRock's constantly looking for how do we get feedback from the market? How do we improve our product and improve the experience for both the advisor and the client?
Thank you. Before we move on to the questions, Rob, are you still with us?
Yes, Jackie, I am. I'm sorry. For some reason, I'm unable to share my camera. There's something
no
that's
problem.
Blocking me. I'm sorry about that.
Don't worry. I can do is you sent us some slides. Maybe I can put those up while you just talk us briefly through your area and what you've noticed in this new era of COVID-19. I'm sorry we can't see you, but hopefully we can see your slides here. So Rob specializes in investment behavior. So Rob, I don't know if you want to just briefly explain what that entails when you're looking at life insurance. Why is investor behavior important?
Well, I mean, Jackie, I mean, I think what's interesting about the conversation so far, and particularly given we've been talking about the pandemic, is that, you know, as you're probably aware, life insurance really got its boost as an industry from the previous pandemic in 1918, you know, the Spanish flu, where in that pandemic, you know, households were hit not in the same way that COVID is hitting us, where sort of generally you're finding older people more prone to dying. In that Spanish flu, it was the sort of 18 to 35 year olds who were the most vulnerable. And as a result of that, you know, you had households that were basically decimated in the sense that often one or both parents died, and suddenly the realization that life insurance is very important. So I think that what's interesting is that pandemic, in a way, and I mean, I'm sure Skulk and Dawn might want to add to this, but in a way, it really boosted the life insurance industry and the realization that life insurance is so important. I think that this pandemic has given a different sort of realization to people. And I think it's through the lockdowns that we've experienced and through the uncertainty that people have now become almost emotionally aware of the implications of their financial positions. And so what we've seen a lot is the need for financial advisors to be showing empathy to their clients, because they've been sitting on the other side of a Zoom call, talking to clients, trying to, you know, support clients through incredibly difficult times of losing jobs, losing incomes, or reduced income. So we've seen the need for the financial advisor's role to shift. And so in a way, in the same way that the Spanish flu, you know, gave a real boost to the importance of life insurance, I think that the COVID-19 is giving a real boost to the relational aspects of the role of the financial advisor. And so in that, with that in mind, you know, I was going to talk briefly to the importance of understanding behavior and in a sense, managing behavior, because I think that what you see today, and there you can see it on that graph which you're showing, Jackie, is that, you know, this cycle of investment emotion that happens all the time. It happens perennially. It's quite strange that when it comes to money, when things are expensive, people want to buy, and when things are cheap, people want to sell. You know, normally if you go to the shops and you go to Woolworths and you want to, you know, buy some clothing, you know, if there's a sale on the sign, you'll probably buy two pieces of clothing rather than one. And if it says for expensive, you'll walk away. But for some reason, when it comes to investment markets, at the point of maximum, you know, financial risk, people want to put money in, and at the point of maximum financial opportunity, they want to take money out. And so we see this play it out all the time. And what if you show the next slide is, you know, what you can see from this roller coaster is that the investment outcomes for clients are consistently not great as a result of their behavior. So what you're seeing there, this is a graph showing performance of investors versus the S&P 500 over multiple time periods. And I think the most important point to note there is the red bar below the line, the performance lag. Often people talk about a behavioral tax or a performance tax, a behavioral penalty. And essentially what that's telling us is that over all those different time periods, investors underperform the investments that they're invested in by margins as high as 7% per annum, as low as 3% per annum. And there is, as a result of this experience of underperforming their investments, the obviously the outcomes are poor for clients very often, because they're moving at the wrong time and motivated by this, you know, chasing performance. You know, that we see this happening consistently, that investors chase investment performance. So as a result of that, and yes, if you move on to the next graph, we can just show a real life study of South Africa, where what you can see there in this graph is an actual multi-asset low equity unit trust fund. It's probably the largest fund in this sector. And this is a fund that's targeting cash plus 2%. So it's not a very aggressive portfolio. What you can see on the blue lines there is the blue line is showing you the return over the previous year of the portfolio. And then the other the graphic to look at is those gray blocks. And those gray blocks are showing you the flow of money in and out of this fund. And so you can see initially where the graph starts to go down from that 5%, the blue line, the money flows out. Then it goes back up, the money flows back in, and you can see the cycle of money flowing in and out following performance onto the extreme right of the graph, where you can see in July 2020, this year, a huge amount of money flowed out of this portfolio. Now, why this is relevant is for two reasons. One is that this is a portfolio that is only targeting cash plus 2%. So it's not a very aggressive portfolio, and yet investors are incredibly jittery about it, even though, you know, your range of returns is not dramatically high. But the second point, and obviously an important point to note here, and this is why I'm so passionate about the work I do, is that many of the people invested in that portfolio are under advice. In fact, the bulk of those flows are advice flows. And so I do a lot of work with financial advisors, helping them around how they can manage the behavior of their clients and their emotions of their clients. And I think that that's been a real challenge, particularly in the last 6 months, because emotions have been so high. So I think maybe, Jackie, the first point is that investor behavior can undermine client outcomes. And the reason that is the next picture that I show you there is a picture of a brain. And it's really just saying the reason that this happens is because of how we're wired as humans. And we are wired in a couple of ways. One is that our brains, because we are dealing with such complexity in the world, our brains are lazy and try to shortcut things. So we have what are called cognitive biases. And so our biases influence our decisions, and our biases often come from our limbic system or our automatic sort of brain, our fast operating brain, and they don't engage our prefrontal cortex, which is our slow operating brain. And so as a result of that, what you find is decisions that are being made in the short term. And if you just go to the next slide, just to emphasize this, our brains are continually looking for threats. And as a result of the shortcuts we take, they want to press the magic certainty button as soon as possible. And that magic certainty button, in the case of that graph of I showed you earlier with the flows of the funds, that graph there, you can see essentially that investors are looking for certainty as soon as the graph goes down. And the only certainty they can get is to take their money out. And as a result of that, what I like to say is their money goes to money heaven, rather than it doesn't serve their longer term, you know, investment outcomes. So I think the point to make really is that managing behavior is a key part of the financial planning process. So there's a quote there from a leading behavioral finance expert, Mayer Statman, who talks about the fact that, you know, the financial planning process is, you know, 93.6% of it is the behavioral management of clients. And I'd be interested to hear if Dawn agrees with that comment or not. But essentially, that managing behavior of clients is at the core of what financial advisors are required to do. And the challenge that we face is obviously that we are wired as human beings to, you know, to seek certainty, to respond to danger, and often allow our emotions to override our cognitive faculties. So, I mean, that's just a comment around the importance of behavioral management, you know, and as a result of that, you know, that quote there that you see from Nick Murray there, the following slide. I mean, I think the point being is that slide about financial planners' value add is that financial planners, you know, can add a huge amount of value to clients by helping them manage their behavior. And this is taken from a guy named Nick Murray, who's a financial advisor in the US and a financial planning coach. And he talks about the fact that his role as a financial planner is to quantify the goals, craft the long-term plan for a client and fund it for the client with a long-term portfolio. And he earns about 20% of his fee from doing that. And then 80% of his fee he earns from coaching clients through working the plan and through all the cycles of the economy and all the fads and fears of the market. And essentially, what he's saying is that he, as a financial advisor, that's his key role, and that he doesn't add any value by trying to time the market or analyze the economy or identify top performing investments. And this is quite contrary to what clients are expecting from financial advisors, because clients go to financial advisors to get the right products, you know, to get the right insurance product, to get the right investment fund, etc. But in reality, our financial outcomes are hugely influenced by our behavior. And so that's why this, the role of the advisor, and I think that this has come out dramatically in the COVID-19 pandemic, is the realization that the extent to which an advisor can help a client with their own emotional well-being and also with their behavior is a huge value add to them. And I think is how the financial planning role is going to evolve given the influence of technology. And the next slide just reemphasizes this from a quote from Michael Kitsis, who's a commentator in the US, who talks about the fact that the future of financial planning is not about dispensing expert financial advice, but about helping clients engage in financial behavior. So I think we're in a big transition in the industry. I think COVID-19 has sort of accelerated that transition and magnified it. But the next slide will show you that the clients don't necessarily agree with this. And clients, when they come and see you, and this is taken from a study by Morningstar, clients come to financial advisors saying that they want them to help them reach their financial goals. They want them to have all the right skills and knowledge. And importantly, you can see that they want them to help them maximize their returns. And only do you see low down on that list of attributes that they looked at 15 attributes of what clients value about a financial advisor service. And you can see that acting as a coach and a mentor and helping the client stay in control of their emotions is right at the bottom of what clients value. And so we have this conundrum where clients are not clear on what is the value of advice that they know what they want to get, but ultimately, as I showed earlier, actually staying in control of your emotions and actually staying on plan and sticking to your plan rather than jumping around is actually the way to achieve your goals. So we have an interesting tension in the industry about, you know, what are expectations of clients and what value can advisors really add.
So, thank you, Rob. Yes, maybe we can pick up on some more of your slides in a bit. We've got some questions coming through here. And the first one is for Dawn, and this probably goes against your concept of stealing your emotions and thinking carefully about your behavior. But Sue would like to know, Dawn, I want to move all my investments offshore. Can my living annuity be moved in its entirety and relocated in funds or a fund offshore?
The short answer is that it can't physically move offshore, but it can be put into a rand-denominated pure offshore fund. So it contains all the offshore funds that you might, you know, can contain the Amazons and Microsofts and everything else, but it will be located here. But it can be completely exposed to offshore when it is an annuity. But you can't physically take it offshore. That's okay. the short answer. Whether you should or not is a much longer discussion between the financial advisor and a client. I mean, I had a client today who's got some money offshore that, as much as it breaks my heart, I'm telling me, you have to bring that back. You need that for your retirement. You can't let it sit over there because, you know, by having it sitting over there doing almost nothing in terms of a yield point of view, you're going to run into a problem and run into a problem soon. So, you know, it is, you know, as much as I can, I like my clients to have offshore exposure where they can physically take it offshore, but you can't do it within a retirement, within an annuity, which is after retirement annuity.
Thank you. Here's a question for Skulk from Frieda. How do I get life insurance? I've got an autoimmune disease.
Yeah, so Frieda, it depends obviously on the severity of the disease and the duration of the disease. I mean, the best that I would recommend is obviously speak to an advisor to explore the various options. You know, I would like to think that BrightRock can provide that support from an underwriting and understand that and let them explore the solutions to you. If you also I'm not sure of selecting an advisor, you can contact BrightRock as well directly and we will definitely be able to point you in the right direction.
Thank you. Dawn, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think this is part of managing the expectations of clients, especially, you know, coming into life insurance and getting them to understand that a life insurance is not a medical aid. Medical aids have to accept you and they've got some, you know, some short-term penalties and, you know, so you can't claim for a year. But in the end, they have to accept you. Life insurance is not like that. Life insurers will assess the risk and they will then act accordingly. So what they can do is either decline completely to cover you, or they could load premium. So instead of paying, you know, you could be loaded by 400% or 100% or 25% or something like that, or they could do exclusions for a specific illness or a specific condition or something along those lines. But you know, they have to weigh up the risk. And the biggest problem that I've found over the years with autoimmune type diseases is that they often attack more than one body system. And it can be quite difficult to get traditional life insurance at a reasonable price. But having said that, even with, for example, HIV, which obviously is an autoimmune disease, and I've got a couple of clients on BrightRock that have HIV. And yes, there are loadings and there are sort of prerequisites in terms of, but, you know, there are life insurance companies like BrightRock that will cover HIV. So it's going to be very specific, but I recommend you get an advisor who is tenacious, like I am. I don't take no for an answer. The underwriters at BrightRock have to phone me, not the client, and I give them a hard time if they try and give me an adverse underwriting. But you know, it can be done depending on what autoimmune disease can be done. But the, you know, this is where holistic planning has to come into play. That if you can't get life insurance, then all the more reason to work with a financial advisor to make sure that you're building up your pension pot, that and so that you could even go on early retirement if the autoimmune disease, you know, doesn't, you know, doesn't let you work at earlier than say 65 or something like that.
Thank you. Anything to add to that, Skulk, or do you think Dawn's covered that?
No, I think that's well said, Dawn. So nothing more to add.
Okay, thank you. So we've got Rowan who has a question here, and he has a question for Rob. He says, Rob, is Sue's question to Dawn about moving all your money offshore, your investments offshore, an example of the behavioral biases you have discussed? In other words, rear view mirror investment decision making. He sounds like he knows a lot about this area.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Rowan, yeah, without obviously knowing the details of Sue's situation, it does instinctively sound like it, you know, because, I mean, if you had to think about investing, one of the key principles of investment that we would hope we all subscribe to, I think, is one of diversification. So certainly one would want to have money invested offshore from a diversification point of view. And the reason we diversify is because we can't predict the future. And so from a behavioral point of view, you know, to want to have all your money offshore when you are living in South Africa, and as Dawn spoke about her other client who's got, you know, living expenses in South Africa, it doesn't sound, you know, sort of sensible in the sense from a diversification point of view. It does sound like you're putting all your eggs in one basket. You know, and you know, it's something we can't predict the future. So we ideally invest money for whatever particular goals we have, rather than, I mean, I think the important point to make on this is that investing is not a competition. It's not about trying to find the best return. You know, long-term equity returns over 100 years in South Africa have been around inflation plus 7%. Internationally, about inflation plus 6%. One, you know, and we talk long term, we're talking, you know, 10 years plus. You know, if you're investing for anything less than 10 years, you shouldn't be, you know, really exposed to significant equities. But the point being, and maybe Rowan, just to go back to your question, yes, I think there is probably a bit of a bias there that's being displayed, unless Sue is planning to emigrate and is needing to get all of her capital offshore.
Thank you, Rob. Skull, Claire is immigrating and she wants to know what will happen to her life insurance when she immigrates, and can she keep South African life insurance and live in another country like Canada? How does that work when you're thinking of immigrating? And also, as you said, life insurance is a long-term commitment. So how do people think about that, particularly now when many people are thinking of immigrating?
Yeah, first of Jackie, again, there's quite a few practicalities in this case to consider. So, first and foremost, she'll have to understand, is she going to maintain South African residency? Is she going to have any further links with South Africa? So, for example, still be having South African bank accounts, earning some form of revenue in South Africa, etc. All those things are important because, unfortunately, the law is quite clear around foreign citizens being able to be insured in South Africa. It's not allowed, but obviously if you've got a work permit or you've got any form of citizenship in South Africa, you can continue insurance in South Africa. And then, just simply from a premium billing point of view, that bank account, and then always to keep in mind, if you come to a claim point of claim, it is, does present certain practical challenges of how will you get assessed, getting all the documentation through, getting the medical reports through, and then also keeping in mind that brand and nomination payouts that will flow. So it's possible. I mean, we in particular with some of our pilot clients, that's a good example where a lot of the guys would be operating in the Middle East, and BrightRock offered a very unique loss of license solution to them that they maintain and continue. And so I think there's those practicalities to consider and work through. And then obviously, what are you going to do offshore? From a work point of view, from an employment point of view, and also your long-term exposure. So yes, a lot of considerations short, but in short, it is possible. And again, speaking to your advisor, it's critical to understand that holistic plan. How would your portfolio be made up going forward and what you intend to stay here? Because I think the guys also alluded to it earlier, life insurance is critical to protect you against exposures, that gaps in if something happens, for example, a death or a disability, temporary or permanent. And it's important to reassess that exposure on your, call it your balance sheet. If one of those events happen and if there's a gap that's still based in South Africa that exposes you to that. Maybe the last point to add, obviously, if your health has changed over time and you do see fantastic value in your product, especially if you look at the BrightRock product that's got features now that at your retirement, etc., it's still available. You can use the cover conversion option. It maintains your insurability all throughout your life, and that becomes a very valuable asset, especially later in years. And again, they're working with your advisor to keep hold of that product, especially if you maybe still got dependents living in South Africa. Is definitely a worthwhile conversation.
Thank you. Dawn, do you have anything to add to that? Is this a question that comes up often for you?
It has come up quite often. And if somebody's emigrating completely and it's a clean slate, then leaving almost nothing here, my recommendation is if you're insurable, keep this in place until you can get insurance in place where you are, in the UK or wherever it is that they're emigrating to, so that there's that continuity. The problem comes in is if somebody is uninsurable. If I think Skalk was alluding to that, if they've had some event that if they tried to get insurance again, they either wouldn't be covered or they wouldn't get favorable rates, and these kind of things, that start to become a problem. And it's particularly when it comes to dread disease cover, in my opinion. Dread disease cover is the one kind of cover that is whole of life in all of my clients' portfolios, because the chance of you having to claim from a dread disease increases as you get older. So it produces, you can get a nice lump sum if you end up with a disease, and it can carry on into your 80s and 90s when there's much more chance of you having to claim from that. And that is a very valuable, space to be in. And that is where uninsurability can hit you quite hard. So in those cases, obviously if the client now leaves, they would have to pay the premium here, just like Skull says. they would get paid here, but the actual, I've never had to go through a claim where now a client is in another country and they've contracted a dread disease, so they've had a heart attack or something like that, and now those reports have to come to the underwriters here to assess, and sometimes in the case of disability, they have to be physically one-on-one assessed. So it does produce issues, but if a client is uninsurable or is going to have to pay a fortune over and above there, it is probably worth doing.
Thank you. Charles has a question that's kind of related. He says that, can you get life insurance in South Africa that pays out in a foreign currency?
No. Yes.
Skulk. Oh, sorry, Dawn, yes. Can you, yeah, could you elaborate?
There is a provider that does it.
Yep.
Okay.
But they're a competition to this guy, so I'll keep quiet. But there is, yeah.
Okay. Skulk, Sabrina wants to know, can you please explain the needs-matched product in a bit more detail? What is a needs-matched product? Don't all financial services companies talk about what we need and what we want?
Yeah, so Jackie, it's a lot of components that we alluded to earlier today, but what we've done and what the product is at its core, it's trying to understand the various exposures that you would have, and these exposures are, for example, how do my future paychecks look? We often ask the questions to advisors and clients, what's the most valuable asset on your balance sheet? And for most clients out there that haven't built up a significant asset-based investment portfolio, it would be their future earnings ability, their ability to earn those paychecks to take care of their family, and especially for younger people that haven't had that chance to build up that asset base. So for us, it was critical then to be able to match those future paychecks exactly. So over time, that obviously will change. They could increase by more than inflation because you might expect to have bigger than expected salary increases. So that's one component. Another element would be to take care of your children as a need. And that's, again, got a very different profile. It might be needing to cover them until they reach age 24. It might have a step up when they go from high school to a tertiary education facility. And that's another key need. Then you go into debt. Debt, again, has got a very different profile. You talk about things like your death-related needs, like estate duty, funeral costs. And then lastly, the category that's worth highlighting, and Dawn spoke about critical illness cover, what we refer to additional expense benefit. That's where those additional costs from a serious illness or injury comes through. And what we've done was pricing each one of those individually and making sure that the client gets the most efficient and effective cover. And the result of that's been phenomenal. We're seeing clients that for the same premium that they were spending elsewhere can get double the cover for the same premium by simply stripping out the waste, having the right duration, the right shape. So a huge amount of efficiency, and think a little bit about the old adage of buying that CD versus just buying now or streaming the songs that you like. It's just such a much more efficient and cost effective solution. That's really in effect what needs match insurance is, day one. And then over time, it evolves. It keeps up with your changes. We've brought in features like cover buyout, that you can buy more cover if your needs have changed and your advisors suggest that, without the need for going through the full underwriting process, or one need has expired, you've paid off your debt, but you're now more worried about that critical illness as you go through life and age. And the product allows itself that flexibility to move premiums around in your product seamlessly through literally a phone call from your advisor or the client. And that's really been, I think, core to the BrightRock success, is that product being able to deliver that level of solution, efficiency, flexibility, as well as that certainty component.
Thank you. Dawn Shaman wants to know, how can an investment club in the form of a company invest in an offshore portfolio or build up an offshore portfolio? Do you ever work with that at all with your clients?
No, we don't. I'm more inclined to work with individuals. My recommendation for an investment club like that would be to move in, you know, to start in the South African offshore space, probably with ETFs. I would think that that would, you know, for an investment club of that nature, using some of the MSCI ETFs and that kind of thing would be a very good place to actually do that. Because once you start getting into, even if it you incorporate it into a juristic body and now trying to manage that juristic body overseas in an investment club, you know, it's going to produce a nightmare. But, you know, it's certainly something that is much easier to handle offshore and still get that full offshore, I mean, handle on here and still get that full offshore exposure. You know, I think sometimes people rush to say, I'm going to get this money out of here. I'm going to, you know, get my Reserve Bank clearance and I'm going to get it out of here. You know, it's something that I'm getting more and more. You know, people, there's a lot of fear out there that we're going to go the same way as Zimbabwe. But, you know, quite frankly, the closest I've seen to somebody behaving like Mugabe is just across the pond there in the United States, quite frankly.
It's
exactly what he did to Morden Tsvangirai, for goodness sake.
So we're getting to the end of our webinar, and Ian has a follow-up question for Rob. He says that long-term equity return that you mentioned of inflation plus 7%, does this include or exclude dividend payments? Sounds like quite a technical question. I'm wondering, is it important, Rob, to know whether it's including or excluding dividend payments?
I think it is important, and if I'm not mistaken, it does include dividend payments. So it's your long-term return from equities. But Dawn might. I see you squinting there, Dawn. Do you disagree with that?
Not always. I mean, if you look at if it's say just like tracking the JSE, when a share goes pays out the dividend, it goes ex-div, and you lose that portion, and then the index carries on. So what a tracker, for example, that would track that index. Will always be above the index because it adds back the dividends and pays out those dividends on a quarterly basis. So if you're just looking at the sort of the way the JSE goes, it usually is without dividends, I think, because of the way shares behave. And, you know, there's some... You know, there's some companies who never produce dividends, and then there are other companies that produce dividends of sort of 5-7% because, you know, that's, you know, the way they're structured. So usually if it's just tracking an index, it will probably be without a dividend.
Yeah, I mean, I think the principle is more about what your expectations of return are from an asset class, and then really, you know, 7% real from equities is the long-term return from the JSE, and you know, internationally it's slightly lower because we have a bit of a risk premium in South Africa.
That long-term is becoming even longer when it comes to South Africa.
Yes, just looking at your rearview mirror,
we haven't seen 7% for yonks.
Yeah.
It's an interesting one. Do you think it no longer holds that we should be looking at the long-term investments, Rob?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, I think that that's the bias that gets played out, is that we think that it's different this time now. So we think that, you know, because we've had 5 years of sort of relatively flat returns, that that's going to knock out the whole long-term return. But the reality is that, you know, when you look globally, you look every, you know, the reality is that equities over time, you know, deliver that return, but the long term in equities is, you know, 10 years plus. It's not 5 years. The other, you know, observation to make there on the counter is that, you know, since 1960, there hasn't been a rolling 5 year negative period on the JSE. You know, so people see equities as very risky, but in fact, if you stay invested, your downside is not as high as it seems, because the volatility is so high in the short term. That makes any sense.
Thank you. Before we close off, there's a final question from Rowan, who says that he's hearing lots and lots of pessimism about South Africa. He offers the following observation. South African government's R2048 bond has outperformed the NASDAQ over the past 6 months. Skulk, how optimistic are you about South Africa?
Well, Jackie, I think we've got our challenges. I mean, it's an absolute fact. We all know what they are. It's not worth belaboring them. I do think there's a tremendous level of opportunity here. I mean, if I just look at the BrightRock story, that a group of people that was motivated, that was single-minded, that had a common objective, you know, built a business that I think is globally recognized, you know, and we've got many case studies like that in financial services in South Africa. And I do believe with that type of mindset, you know, we've got amazingly talented people in South Africa. You know, we must create an environment where they feel there's opportunities to grow. And I think we do have a tough 2-3 years ahead at least. But I think our future is definitely positive as a standout. I think there's significant shifts in our political landscape that I think lays a good foundation. I think there's a will to change things. It's about creating that environment for more people to feel that they can start businesses and develop businesses. And there's definitely capital that's looking to invest in those opportunities. But you know, nothing comes easy, Jackie. I think none of us should think that building a business and the challenges that we face are going to be surmounted easily. It will take very strong leadership at all levels, at starting at obviously our most senior offices in the land, but also at business levels, leading from the front. And it will take a lot of hard work. I mean, we'll all have to eat a bit of humble pie and realize that yesterday is not there anymore, and we'll kind of have to build brick by brick, and success doesn't come overnight. And if more people realize that, then there's a lot of people realizing that. We see it daily now. We will have a great future in this country. We've got all the goods. We've got all the talent.
Well, I hope you're right. And as Rob said, we must look at the long-term future. Is that right? The long-term trajectory,
yeah.
Rob?
Yeah. I mean, Jackie, if I might just make a couple of comments on that. I mean, I think that because certainly our experience is dealing with financial advisors day in and day out, there's a great deal of pessimism out there, and that's getting that from their clients. And I think that Dawn's point is an important point for people to think about, to look around the world and see what's going on in the world and then see what's going on here. And we're seeing, for example, you know, Mr. Magashule has now been, you know, going to court now. We're seeing other prosecutions happening. We're seeing Mr. Ramaphosa, he's playing the long game, but he's playing a game that is going in the right direction. So I think that's the first point. The second point is for anybody who's feeling pessimistic about South Africa, they should go and read J.P. Luntman, read the articles that he's written about what's going on. Because we, again, the biases that we follow, we follow the highlights of the news, the headlines, with the recent stuff. We don't look behind that. And that's what I'd encourage people to do, to actually go behind. And then thirdly and lastly, sorry, I've got relations in the UK and the US. I can promise you now, they're more interested in coming here than I am in going there.
Thank you. Dawn, anything to add to that before we close off?
No, you know, I think if the country can get the corruption under control, then, you know, and we really start to see some of that VBS money being paid back, that, you know, the asset forfeiture going in there, and not just putting these guys in jail, but, you know, trying to get back some of that money so that we don't have to continually pay increased taxes. You know, then I think you're going to see everybody start to feel a lot more optimistic. But, you know, when you just get, you know, the all that COVID money just being looted. And, you know, that was just a couple of months ago. So it's like, it's a bit difficult to, and no sign of any of that being paid up back just yet.
But the good news is, if you look on BizNews today, you'll see there's a list of at least 100 people who've been arrested over the last month or so for corruption, some small cases of corruption. But then we've also got, as Rob mentioned, Ace Magashule in court today. So hopefully that will give us all some reason to be optimistic about the longer term future.
Yes.
So thank you very much to everybody who's joined us today. Thank you, Skalk Malan, the CEO of BrightRock, and Dawn Ridler, who is an independent financial advisor, and also Rob MacDonald. We didn't see you today, but we heard you. So thank you very much for joining us. Thank you to everybody.
Thank you.
Don't worry, it's fine. And thank you to everybody who joined us on the webinar today. We've had quite a few questions from people wanting to know how they can get in touch with Dawn. If you just send me an email, I will pass your details on to Dawn. And some people also wanted to get in touch with Rob. So I'll pass those details on as well. And thank you very much to our panelists.
Thank you. Thank you.
Great weekend, everyone.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.